So we're here with Norm Thomas in San Antonio, Texas. Norm is on his way to San Marcos for the start of the Texas Water Safari. You've been involved with this race since 1978?
Yeah, 1978.
And I say race, it's the Water Safari. Is it an actual race? And if so, what exactly is it?
It's a... I will tell you that the safari varies with the competitor. There are world-class paddlers that race that will just blow your socks off. And then there are the rest of us who put more emphasis on the safari part than the race part.
And how about you? You were actually inducted into the Hall of Fame last year, I believe.
That's, I'm going to get a little pin or something this year. But the... I'm a representative of someone that gets in because they just keep showing up and finishing. I think it's kind of like the I'm getting a gold watch kind of thing. Not here's a great paddler.
I always like the word just, because what's easy for you would not be easy for me, which is paddling a canoe from, what is that, 150 miles further?
It's 260 something between.
Yeah, so I was only off by 110.
Yeah, not much. And but like I thought in 1978 with a buddy in 1978, and we were going to win it, of course, because we'd gotten out of the Army a few years earlier, and we're a couple Rangers, and we could do anything. And we learned real quick that there's more to paddling than just sticking that wooden thing in the water a bunch of times.
Yeah, and I want to get into the technique some, but I really, you know, interpersonal interaction is huge in all that we do, and I can't imagine being in a canoe with another person nonstop, 260 miles. I mean, you're going around the clock. How do you not be at the other person's throat?
I don't know. I've done it solo since 98, and I did it with my best friend in 1978, and we survived. And what you find when you're with another person is that there will be times during any ultra marathon event when one will reach his breaking point. And when there's another person there, oftentimes the breaking points don't coincide, which allows one person to carry the other one. And so I know there were times when I carried my buddy, and I know for sure there were some times where he definitely carried me. And I know the one that really sticks out in my mind is, I think, about the last 6 or 7 miles of this race, which is across an open bay. You cannot coast to the finish. He definitely carried me because I was completely blown. And for a period, I think just he got out. We all got out. We were in shallower water, and he pulled the canoe, and I just like a little baby followed along behind him while he walked a couple miles to the finish. I think we dragged our boat across the finish line. I don't think we paddled across the finish line in 78. But I've never been more happy to reach something. It was the hardest thing that I had done in my life up to that point.
Isn't that funny? I mean, that final 6 miles, which sounds like nothing after when compared to 260, but when it's you're actually the person in that moment and you're looking at that 6 miles, you know you're blown and that it could actually be a couple of hours. I mean, what's your mind like at that point?
Dear Lord, please let me take another step. I just know to finish that race, we had to walk as far as we could. We walked to the horizon, then we took a left and walked to the next horizon, and then we finished.
Now, tell us about the river. I mean, what's it like going through a Texas river? There's water moccasins, there's snakes, there's... log jams, I'm sure. And I mean, do you know what's coming up at all? Is there a map, anything that tells you about river conditions?
through the years,
I've
kind of learned a few things, because when we did it in 1978, we'd seen maybe 5 miles of the river, and that's also the way I did it for probably my next 7 or 8 races. I just looked at it as a show up and do this river. Every turn was a surprise. Every strainer was a surprise. Every log jam was a surprise. And, you know, my mindset at the time was just face whatever comes, adapt, and overcome. And we were able to do that. But I've learned as I got wiser and a little older that we wasted a lot of energy, a lot of strength. And so maybe practice is a good thing to do sometime on the river that exists. But it's a beautiful river. We start on the San Marcos River. We start at its very headwaters in a lake where there's, I don't know how many springs are coming up out of the water, but it's just crystal clear, beautifully. It's just beautiful. In the city of San Marcos, a little narrow, beautiful river. And then after about almost 90 miles, it joins with the river called the Guadalupe, which is wider. The current gets noticeably slower, and then it's mainly a slog for the till the end, with a few just hair-raising exceptions along the way, because every now and then there's some places that can break a person or a boat.
So there are some rapids that you have to navigate.
Yes, there's a few rapids, and if you don't know what you're doing, you know, you can hurt yourself and the boat there. But they're not high class rapids. They're not class 3 or 4, and the log jams are killers. The temperature is another killer, because it's I think my hottest race, it was hovered around 110. Back around 1998, I think it was, and usually it's way above 90 degrees and not a lot of shade.
Can you just jump out of the boat and cool off in the river?
That's a great idea to do, and you can do that until you get down to the last probably 60 miles, and I used to jump out of the river and cool off there until the night. After I'd done it several times, when a 12 or 13 foot alligator went after a buddy of mine who was in another solo boat next to mine, and so I don't get out in the river anymore down in their neck of the woods. That's their neighborhood, not mine.
12 or 13 feet. That's pretty good sized. How do you see at night? How do you light a boat?
I have discovered, for me, I use 2 Maglite flashlights that my buddy has put together a nice piece of closed cell foam on the bow of my boat, and it is fantastic. Just a regular Maglite. I think it takes C-cell batteries, and the batteries will last 12 hours. So a set of batteries will last me all night, and I love paddling now. But I haven't had lights except for my last 2 or 3 safaris. I kind of poor boyed it all the time, and so a lot of my safaris were going down with no lights other than maybe a little headlight, but you turn that off because of the bugs. And so you just look up at the sky and look down in the river and to see if you listen for obstacles up ahead, and you watch for stobs and different things in the river. But if you look up into the sky, you actually can see the little road between the trees, and you just kind of stay in the middle of that. That's how I paddle at night. But now with the lights, with the mag lights, that's the way to go. And there's other high-tech lights people buy that cost a couple $100, but that's not the way I go.
Now, we are sitting out on a deck right now, and that is thunder that you're hearing in the background. So what happens when there's a big storm that maybe causes some log fall that, even though you've paddled the river, I mean, a storm can change it.
Oh, it changes every year. The river always looks a little different every year because of floods and different things. Right. Some years it's record lows. Otherwise, in 2000, we had we started in what was supposed to be a very low year, but we had 3 days of rain leading up to the safari. They started the safari, It kept raining, and within 40 miles of the start of the race, we were in a full-fledged flood, and there were refrigerators, trees. I actually did a little, about almost 200 miles into the race, I helped the sheriff's office, who was up on a cliff looking down at a Suburban that was in the water, and I thought I was going to see a body in there, but fortunately there wasn't, but there were cars floating in the river as well. That was an exciting year. I got second in solo that year only because 10 of the guys ahead of me broke their boats. So it's just sometimes it's who can make it. Can you survive it?
So that brings up a great point that I'd like to have us wrap this up with, but that's in 78. You're a young guy. It's 40 years ago. I mean, you even said you felt like you could do anything. You could muscle through it. And as you've matured, I believe you've found that there's something to technique.
Amen. And I'm really turning into a paddler. Last year was actually the first year that I single-bladed the whole way, and it felt wonderful. Before that, I'd always double-bladed, because I thought, you know, that's what real men do. But no, real men know how to paddle with any kind of thing, and I'm really getting some technique. I think it's a real lifetime sport. I really love it.
So just for those of us who aren't educated in paddling, can you explain what double and single blade is?
Sure. You know, you see somebody in a kayak, Eskimo, with their little long paddle with a blade on both ends. That's a double blade, and a single blade's just just has one paddle.
And something you've been doing this year, I know you gave your slot to another racer, and you're actually going to be officiating, greeting people as they finish at the end, which was actually really nice of you. But I know you're going to be going back to it as a competitor. What are some things that you've been working on as far as balance and yoga and really overall fitness?
Well, this thing I've always heard about, you know, the core. I don't know that I've ever had a core consciously. As a young man, when I could do 100 push-ups easily and, you know, anything that an airborne ranger can do, I don't think I appreciated what the core was. I just had it. But now that I've put on the weight and you get older, those little tiny muscles in your body matter. And through yoga, I'm getting in touch with them. And the way I look at it is I've really got more of my boys, as I call them. I think all the little muscle fibers in me are really working as a team now. And I've never paddled this well. And I think, and I know the veterans all around me are telling me that I should be able to finish in the top 25, which would really be cool for an old man. I'm looking forward to that, if that's possible.
Well, I hope you have a great weekend with the paddlers, and I look forward to you competing again in the very near future.
Thanks, brother. Love you.
Acast powers some of the world's best podcasts. Here's a show we recommend.
I'm Ned Fulmer.
And I'm Ariel.
We're from the Try Guys, and we have a new podcast called Baby Steps. It's an irreverent parenting podcast, because parenting is not perfect.
We just had a newborn, baby Finn.
I got pooped on. Ariel has pink eye.
I don't have pink eye.
We talk to some experts. We even bring you 4 a.m. thoughts from our garden.
Oh my gosh, it's literally 4 a.m.
Just to go back here, I thought I got poop in my eye.
Yeah.
And that causes pink eye.
Parenting is a mess. We're a mess. You're a mess. Join us every Sunday. Listen to Baby Steps on Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast recommends.